Welcome to the most inappropriate book club you never knew you were missing. Featuring at least three different books every week. Starring Martha Steele, the weirder the book, the better. Vonnie Golden, historical fiction with a side of trauma porn. Keith Steigert, reading the books your mother warned you about. These people are passionate about books. Maybe a little too passionate. Plotting world domination one book at a time. They are three book girls.
Maybe he listened to us talking about him on the podcast, and he's like, "Whoa, maybe I need to quit sending emails to these people. I'm going to show up at my door with scissors.
Give me my ebook. Give me my audio book.
I meant so that we can clip a lock of his hair to keep close to our hearts.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Whoops.
Because I'm a little stalkerish.
I just wish that book I'd left in the airport in Germany was a better book. It was unfortunately like the worst book I ever read by Robert Silverberg.
Somebody else might really love it.
Somebody might. It, you know, I looked it up on Goodreads and it got a few 5 stars, but it was mostly 3s and 2s. And somebody said, yeah, this is one of Silverberg's later ones. And while he was brilliant in his earlier years, by the time he got old, he was just a curmudgeonly old bigot.
That is very descriptive. It fits a lot of people that I know. Curmudgeonly old bigot.
You
shouldn't talk about my mom that way.
So, Pat, how was the overall, what I know this is hard, but what was your favorite thing about your trip to Spain?
The City of Arts and Sciences was just amazing, which is, it's a section in Valencia. It's all super modern architecture, and it's got an opera house, an IMAX theater, a science museum, a convention hall, and an aquarium.
Wow.
All designed by this guy named Calatrava, who's just an incredible architect. And there was just always something to do there, always something to see there. And it was 2 blocks from our hotel.
You spend a lot of time going there?
Yeah, we didn't have anything else to do. And a lot of the FIAS festival activities centered around there or started there and moved out. And so, yeah, that was it. Valencia is the prettiest city I have ever seen. It's clean, it's modern, it's got a great public transportation system, it's got a huge long park that they took a riverbed, they rerouted a river that had flooded downtown, so they ran the river around the outside of the city and turned the riverbed into a 10 kilometer long park that runs all the way through the city center.
Dang.
There, I found out later after I started noticing all these things that it was apparently Europe selects one city to be their green city of the year. And Valencia is this year's green city. And friendly and modern. And I mean, by comparison, and it's got a lot of old historical things too. But when we went to Rome, I mean, the history is amazing. The history is unparalleled in Rome, but it's crowded and it's dirty.
Did you come across any bed bugs over in...
I did not see any bed bugs, but homeless people on the street and people just drop their trash. And I mean, you don't make a city that old and never revise your street pattern and not have it be a mess.
Yeah.
The streets go every which way in there. It would take nerves of steel to drive a car in that city. Oh my God. No.
Yes.
No way. But the history is amazing. I mean, they save every rock. And
so in other words, I couldn't go there because I'd try to collect a rock and go to jail. And Vonnie got to work from home this week.
I did.
So tell me about that. How is it like you and your mom in the house with the dog working? How did that go?
Well, for the first day, Monday was a little hectic because I had 5 dogs at my house, not just one, because I was dog sitting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Tyler wasn't back into town yet. But after that, it actually was a breeze. I mean, my mom stayed in the living room. I stayed in my bedroom. And Echo slept either next to me on the floor or on the bed.
Huh. Well, that's nice.
The only thing is that I absolutely know that if I ever have to work from home again, I need to clear out my refrigerator and not have any food in the house or the ability to order any food because I did nothing but eat all week.
Yeah, I would suppose that would be a problem if you have absolutely no
willpower,
impulse control.
I do not have impulse control. But it wasn't bad. I mean, I liked it other than the fact that, you know, I did nothing but eat all friggin' week.
No fun and interesting stories from that area then. If you didn't run into anybody all week, we don't get to hear about elevator guy.
I haven't seen attractive elevator guy. I think maybe he heard the podcast and he's like taking a different elevator now.
He's like, hell, this is
like,
creepy.
Dude, no, can't be having this now. It's really weird.
Is this like the successor to Hot Neighbor?
Yes. Attractive elevator guy doesn't quite roll off the tongue in the same way that Hot Neighbor did, but we're trying.
We just have to call it the lift. Hot lift guy.
Hot lift.
I like that.
Yeah.
No hot neighbors. No hot elevator guys. Today's the first day that I've worn real pants in a week.
Yeah, she said, I haven't worn pants all week. And I'm like, dude, that's a terrible visual. I don't really want to see you running around pantsless, even in my imagination.
Well, I hope you don't imagine me running around naked.
You know what? This is like forever ago, but I used to live in the same town as my aunt and my cousin. They'd lived together forever and had each other, kind of. But my cousin Debbie was kind of on the larger side. And she had this thing where she came home and she took off her clothes. So if you just popped in for a visit, you were in for something that you didn't plan for.
Like she just run around naked?
Yes.
Or would she keep her bra and
underwear
on? No,
she was naked. Hmm. Naked, naked.
Wyoming's not usually a friendly climate to do that in.
I know. She must have had a good summer. She must have had a good heater.
Well, you said that she was a little bit of a larger woman.
Yes.
Clothes sometimes are uncomfortable and pinchy, and sometimes all you can think of is going home and taking your pants off because they're pitching your thigh fat.
Your thigh fat?
My thigh fat. I've completely done that, but of course I put shorts on. I don't run around naked.
The whole idea of running around sans clothes is foreign to me, I guess. Maybe it's because I did grow up in a cold state.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm from a cold state. Well, that and it would be really not good to run around naked when you have pets because they're going to jump up and they're going to gouge the crap out of your nether regions.
My brother-in-law used to talk about when they first had their cats and stuff. And when they were younger married, he used to talk about the cat getting him in his Franks and beans.
Or just a cat trying to climb your naked leg.
Oh, yeah. That hurts
not
so freaking
fun.
Bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Or even in thin pants, you know, like it wasn't that long ago that dress pants were a thing. So they didn't look like, you know, they weren't really tight fitting. So they didn't look like they were insubstantial. But boy, you get a cat go up your leg and a pair of those. Holy crap, that hurts.
Speaking of legs and things that are a thing, I need to ask, I have a serious question here.
Okay.
Our clothes dryer vents into our basement. And so I have always put a nylon stocking over the end of it to catch the lint. And as long as I was working, I had an endless supply of stockings with runs in them that went. But once I retired, I didn't have that anymore. So it's like I ran through the last of my hoard of old dead stockings. And it was like, I need a stocking to put over. So I went to the grocery store, no pantyhose. And I thought, fine, I'll go to Walmart. They don't have them except for little girls. Is pantyhose just like not
nobody wears pantyhose? I mean, like nobody.
No one.
Yeah, it's really hard to find pantyhose.
You go bare legged.
Or you
leggings. Wear tights. Like,
or tights,
you know, opaque tight. If you look at the tights section, you could maybe find some, or you could get some trouser socks. I didn't even know.
Yeah, that's true.
Can you get trouser socks?
But they're
socks
thicker than pantyhose.
Yeah. Yeah, no, pantyhose are, I ended up getting little girls. They're like somewhere between tights and pants. They called them more like pantyhose, but they are kind of the right weight. But it was like, holy shit. The last time I tried to buy pantyhose for me, I was doing a show set in the 1940s and I needed ones with seams up the back. So I was ordering specialty stuff online and didn't realize pantyhose was an endangered species.
It's weird how trends will do that, though.
Yeah.
But I mean, honestly, pantyhose were the worst.
They were the worst.
They were the worst.
No. Stockings with garter belts were
okay,
the worst.
Okay, yeah.
Pantyhose were a welcome change from that.
Yes, from the garters.
Yeah.
Now, those are still worn. Those are kind of a big deal right
but
now.
But they're worn for...
For purposes more than they were just not they were never comfortable.
Pantyhose, I there was never a comfortable day for me in pantyhose. They always rode down so that the crotch of the pantyhose was about halfway down. Not a fan. And of course I had longer fingernails for a very large portion of my life during the pantyhose era. And so I was ripping the shit out of them immediately.
But they made your legs look good. Pantyhose with a sharp short skirt, you looked hot.
Yes.
You know?
The pantyhose, especially if you don't have great legs or a great tan.
Yeah.
Would make your legs look great. And they kind of held you all in if you were wearing something like really tight fitting.
You didn't jiggle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. There was no jiggling with pantyhose. What did you say, Keith?
Control top.
Yes, control top.
In the eggs.
Nothing was moving when you had those things on, except downwards, so that you had that nice.
Well, if I got control tops, they would actually stay up. It was when I got the non-control top pantyhose that they would, that crotch would be at my knees by the end of the day.
Yeah.
I felt like a freaking mermaid walking around.
Yeah, I don't, overall, I don't miss them. But having said that, I don't wear dresses anymore. So,
yeah, now I just wear shorts underneath my dresses. So much easier.
Yeah, bike shorts, I guess would be.
Well, they actually make shorts.
To wear
underneath your dresses now. I've got tons.
What's that called? Is there a word for that? Or are we just wearing shorts willy-nilly?
I don't know. Short or slip shorts or...
Slorts?
Like slip shorts. Yeah. I don't know what they're called.
I mean, the last ones I bought were just biker shorts because they were cheaper.
The last time I went to look for a slip. That's the other thing. You really just don't see around a whole lot.
No.
I was out someplace. I don't remember if it was a convention or something. I don't know why I was with my sister. But she's like, you need a slip. I can see through that. So we went looking for, you couldn't find it. And this was probably 30 years ago.
Really?
I had a hell of a time finding a slip.
I got married 20 years ago and I searched to find a slip to put under my wedding gown.
I guess a slip is not a thing.
Not anymore, I guess.
Nobody cares if the highlight of your bare ass sticks out for the world.
Well, it's because if you're wearing something that thin, you wear tights. So when they see through your dress, all they're seeing is tights, not your
nicely formed buttocks and legs.
Yeah.
In tights.
So it's not like they're seeing anything but what they wouldn't see if you were wearing yoga pants.
You know what? Here's another thing. Where do you guys stand on the whole flesh-colored blouse with a blazer? There was a girl on the freaking news this morning that every time I look up, I would go like this because she was wearing a some sort of a bodysuit or something that was really... Yes, and it was so close to the same color of her skin that she looked naked with a blazer is what it looked like. She looked like she was...
I mean, some people can pull that off. Did I ever tell you the story about when I worked at Walmart, when I was a cashier at Walmart part-time?
Which one?
Which Walmart?
No, which story?
There was, I can't remember if it was evening, and this chick was walking, and I mean walking with purpose. She, minding her own business, perfectly fine, went and got something, and she went to go to the self-checkout, and she was wearing one of those flesh-colored shirts. Yeah. And she was a very attractive, well-built young lady, and somebody actually ran into an end cap because they were looking so hard to see if she was walking around naked or if she had a shirt on. Into the end
yeah.
cap. It was hilarious.
It's just so, it's like if you're not really paying attention and then you look up and it's sort of like, remember Pat, when you used to have that Jean-Luc Picard cutout guy in your office?
He's up on my upstairs balcony.
Right,
now.
Right. So you yeah. had him in your office and you'd walk in there and you knew it was there, but it would make you jump every goddamn time you turned around because it was right there.
It didn't me so much, but one night we got a new cleaning service at the station. They'd never been in there before. And I found a note on my desk the next morning that just said, Captain Picard scared the Trek out of me.
That's funny.
We have a life-size Chewbacca stand that sometimes does that when my husband's trying to be funny. You like walk into a room and Chewbacca's there. Whoa! Fuck Chewbacca. Get back to the basement. So it cute. Is like a little yeah. creepy. You're like, Bigfoot!
No. We've nattered on long enough. We should probably make the jump to book reviews.
I have a book that kind of scared the crap out of me.
Woo!
Did not do historical fiction this week. Remember how I told you that at work, a bunch of coworkers were kind of getting together and like swapping books and stuff?
Yeah.
Well, this is one of the books. And I wasn't 100% sure, but I didn't have anything in at the library and I looked and this was available. So checked it out.
Bonnie's branching out. Watch out.
It's called Social Creatures by Tara Isabella Burton. And this book was weird and creepy and actually pretty good. I don't know about how realistic. There's a lot of things that wouldn't happen in real life, but not so much that it ruined the book. The main characters in this book, we're going to start with Louise. Louise is a very introvert person, shy. Her life is very structured on purpose. She's one of those people that weighs her food because she's worried about gaining weight and she wants to eat the same amount. She's young, probably, I would say early 20s is how old I would say that she is. Not super rich, you know, has a few jobs, lives in New York City and definitely has to watch her pennies. And I can't remember, it's been a couple of weeks since I've read this book and I can't remember how exactly she meets the other main character in this book named Lavina. And Lavina is the complete opposite of Louise. Lavina is a force and she's very, you know who she kind of reminds me of? And some of our younger viewers will not know this, but Alvin and the Chipmunks, who was the Chipettes' mom? Oh, shit, what was her name? You know, well, how I'm
you're talking
about?
To the wrong crowd here because I didn't.
I mean, I can
Alvin
picture her with the white hair and everything.
I don't remember there being a mom. I just remember yeah. the three chipmunks and
like it's he not was the Dave and she was like Mrs. or Miss something.
Was it Miss Miller?
Yeah.
Miss Miller. You know how she was like over the top and she wore like those fur, those feather boas and everything yeah. else. Well, this would be like a 23-year-old version of her. And so she's, you know, she's very rich, comes from a rich family. She doesn't work. She's on an allowance. Mom and dad pay credit cards. They pay her rent. They send her money, so on and so forth. So she's very pampered and very charismatic and an extrovert. And they meet, and I can't remember exactly how they meet, but Lavina kind of just sucks Louise into her world. First, it was so that she could tutor her little sister, I think it was. And then she takes Louise to parties, and then she just becomes her person. And anything Lavina does, she wants Louise to go there too. And because of this, Louise is struggling to try to keep all of her jobs and keep up this lifestyle with Lavina. And because they're drinking and they're doing drugs and going to all these parties and these social events, and it's just a lot. But Louise loves the life. It's so different than anything that she's ever had, and she loves it. And Lavina starts to get tired of Louise, starts to grow bored with her. Mm-hmm. And Louise doesn't want out of the lifestyle. Ooh. So something happens, which I'm not going to say what, because it happens so early in the book. It's hard to, I just have to give out that teaser because I can't describe the rest of the book without that. Okay. Something happens and Lavina is not in the picture anymore. And Louise basically takes over her life. She manipulates Lavina's social media to make it seem like she's taking this sobriety pledge, and to try to clear her head, she's off gallivanting the country and she's like at the Grand Canyon and like all of these different places, like way out west, way far away. And she's trying to keep up this facade, and she's taking money out of Lavina's accounts this whole time because she's basically lost all of her jobs trying to keep up with Lavina. So she has to, you know, pay bills. She needs things. And it just kind of goes from there. And just the length that Louise goes to try to keep up this lie, this, what would you call it? This facade?
Facade, yes.
To keep up this facade of Lavina's just, you know, out at the Grand Canyon being sober, and that she's going to come back eventually, and still trying to insert herself into Lavina's life. I mean, she's even living in her apartment, wearing her clothes.
Oh my God.
Wearing her perfume. I mean, it was
a single white female, baby.
Yeah, so much. And it was creepy. And it kind of made me do that big eye thing when I was listening to her at work. Like, what? What the fuck, Louise? But it was a really good book. I mean, like I said, there were parts of it that probably in real life, Louise would not have gotten away with, but this is Bookland and things happen like this and we just have to go with it. And it was really good. It was a really quick read. I read it kind of quick. I can't remember how long it was, but it was one of those books I didn't want to stop reading because I wanted to know what was going to happen. Is it the most intellectual thing you could read? No. Was it fun? Definitely. Definitely a fun book. And that again is called Social Creatures by Tara Isabella Burton.
I'm so proud of you for branching out. You go, girl.
Thanks. And the cover has an eye on it. Not like a gross eye, but like
The gross eye.
A makeup.
Oh.
Eye.
Oh. Oh, I was hoping for a gross eye.
No.
Pus and blood and
it wasn't a gory book.
Mayfly, yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay, Keith, are you planning to bring the room up a bit by chance?
Yeah, I'm going to bring the room up. So the book I am reviewing is called Riley Thorne and the Dead Guy Next Door by Lucy Score. So obviously our book is about Riley Thorne, and she is not living her best life right now, I guess you could say. So she's a writer, and she was a writer, like a copywriter on like the local news station. And she got married to the anchor, who turned out to be an ass. And he cheated on her with the weather girl. So she's done with the anchor. He's gonzo. So they're divorced. But he is like
I forget. There's something that my kids call it when, like, the son of the guy who owns the station is miraculously the anchor and...
Nepotism, perhaps?
Yeah, there's some clever word that the kids use now, like, but I mean, it's basically nepotism. So his dad owns the station. They're very, very wealthy. And somehow, even though her ex-husband is the guy that cheated, she's paying him alimony.
What?
And he makes a ton more than her. So his lawyers took her to freaking town. She can't even really afford to have her own place. So her aunt and uncle, who are twins, and they're like in their 70s, inherited this really rundown mansion. And they rent out all these rooms to other older people. But they have to pretend that they all are related. I always thought this was a law other places, so I'm not sure now, but in Pennsylvania, and this takes place in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, you can't have a bunch of people who live together. You can't have so many people who live together who aren't related. It's basically a really old law that I think was supposed to inhibit brothels. But it's why we don't have sorority houses here.
That is so freaking bizarre.
Because of that. So because all these old people and Riley, who's the youngest person there, she's in her 30s, live together, they have to pretend they're related. And there's like an old crotchety black guy. and two hippie twins. And so anybody who loves reading about like elderly people who are still kicking ass and taking names, this book is phenomenal. But Riley Thorne is also from a family that has very psychic vibes. And so everybody in all the women in the family, like her mom does tarot cards and her sister has like a psychic sense of smell, which you don't really learn too much about in this book, because I would love to know how that works.
Psychic sense of smell? I kind of want to have a character that just does that in a book. I want to make up a character just with that.
And so Riley Thorne's grandmother is like this huge higher up in all of like the magical psychic phenomenon of the world. Like she's this huge... She has all these gifts and Riley has never wanted them. Like she has never entertained the idea of being psychic. She tries to tamp down her powers, but she can hear dead people. And so like all these funny things, she has her Uncle Jimmy's car after he died. So whenever she drives in it, he's still there. And he talks to her all the time while she's driving his truck around. Everything is pretty much, you know, this would be a good time to fish. I wonder if that guy likes fishing. You should go get a pole and let's go fishing. I mean, every time she gets into the car, it's something like that. So our story is that Riley lives in like on the highest floor, like on the third floor. There are two apartments, which are basically just big rooms that share a bathroom on that level. And the guy she shares the level with is this old guy that is really not very nice. They share a bathroom and he always leaves his underwear in front of the sink. So she has special underwear tongs. Because they're like his used underwear. So she didn't want to pick them up. So she like throws them in front of his door every day. Just weird stuff like that goes on in this book.
So funny.
But one day she thinks she's having this big hallucination and she sees something in the future and she doesn't know what to make of it. It's almost like she's like seeing a dream and she kind of makes light of it. Well, then she sees this crotchety neighbor being killed, being shot by someone and being killed, like in their house.
Whoa.
So she tries going to the police and telling people, I think this guy might be murdered. Now, maybe in New York, I don't know, but this is Harrisburg. We in Pennsylvania don't have like a lot of deals with that. So they're just laughing. Teehee, that's hysterical. And then this PI comes looking for him, and Riley doesn't know why he's there. And his name is Nick, and he's this brooding, like everything you think of a PI should be. Like, I mean, I'm sure he has just a baseball cap, but I'm picturing him in the fedora. I'm seeing a Humphrey Bogart all throughout this book in my brain. But so he's this broody PI, and he is trying to find the guy that lives next to her as well. And she doesn't know if he's the guy that's going to off him. So she's being just kind of, and she doesn't know he's a PI because he's being just sneaky and sneaking around stuff. So this guy does die exactly like her vision says. And now she has these other visions, and she needs to make sure they don't come true. And plus she wants to catch the guys that did it, because when you're a psychic and you go to the police and you tell them this dude is going to die and then he dies, that doesn't look good for you.
No, not really.
So this entire book is her just doing ridiculous things with these old people that live in her house. This PI guy keeps hanging around, and her life is just a dumpster fire. And meanwhile, she's trying to find a guy that she didn't really get a very good look at in her vision. And she's trying to make sense of that and trying to discover who murdered this guy. It's really hysterical. Lucy Score writes really good banter. She writes excellent octogenarians who just do whatever the hell they want and have whatever opinions they want. It's so funny. Like, any opinion they have, it's like right there. They're like, oh yeah. They're making her awkward because like the PI will be coming by and they'll be talking about her and how long it's been since she's had sex or whatever. And one of them's like a yoga guru and he gets stuck in a position. And oh, and they leave the doors open all the time and the windows open. So this guy comes in the door, which is unlocked, goes up, knocks on the door, kills this guy, and then leaves through an open window. And after all this happens, Lucy keeps saying to the people, because she loves them, she says, okay, we got to start locking doors. No one ever does. Like, they leave more things open. So it's a really hysterical book. There's a big mystery in it. It's almost like a really sharp-witted Stephanie Plum.
Sounds pretty awesome.
I liked Stephanie Plum. It's really funny. It does sound funny. I love funny stuff.
So, I mean, it is one of the, it really reminds me of like a Janet Ivanovich kind of, almost like a caper kind of thing.
Love a caper.
Like her grandma.
Grandma Mazur.
It's crazy, but there are like seven of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I might have to try that. I mean, if I don't like it, I can always take it back.
Yeah, so I loved it. I thought it was hysterical. And she has more books coming out. The fourth book in that series comes out this summer. So that was Riley Thorne and the Dead Guy Next Door by Lucy Score.
Okay, Miss World Traveler Pat.
I have a different sort of book, but it was absolutely fascinating. And I want to start right up front because I got an advanced copy of this from Isabel at Macmillan Publishing. And I want to thank Isabel for hooking me up with Shakespeare, The Man Who Pays the Rent by Judy Dench. And Brendan O'Hay, who is a friend of hers and another actor and director from the British theater scene. And I have not seen the print version. I imagine it's interesting, but Get the audiobook, because it's not all Judy Dench. For those of you, I mean, if someone's really been living under a rock and doesn't know who Judy Dench is, one of the great still living British actresses, Royal she Shakespeare played, Company.
She played M in
a couple of James Bond movies. She won her Oscar for playing Queen Elizabeth in Shakespeare in Love.
Which was also awesome. Yeah.
And may I just say, Under the Rock, that's me. I've been under the rock. I didn't know who that was.
Dame Judi Dench, really? Oh,
I didn't know who that was.
So here's one caveat about this audiobook. Judi Dench is, I believe, 89 years old now, and she suffers from pretty severe macular degeneration. She can't see much anymore. So Brendan O'Hay did this extensive series of interviews with her. I think they said there's something like 120 hours that he recorded of talking with her. And then he culled it down to build a script to the most cogent stuff. But of course, she is not able to read a script because of her visual impairment. They found a woman whose name is Barbara Flynn, who sounds as much like Judi Dench as you can be without being Judi Dench. So she reads Judy's part of these interviews, and Brendan O'Hay, of course, reads his part. But Judy does all of the Shakespearean quotes because she has a memory like a steel trap. She almost photographic memory for Shakespeare. And she can quote great passages of it. So the reason they call it Shakespeare, the man who pays the rent, was because she and her husband, Michael Williams, I believe, both actors, they did a lot of Shakespeare. And it was literally, that was their bread and butter. That was between movies, between some contemporary things that she did. It was always back to Shakespeare. In the course of this book, she goes through, I believe, 20 different Shakespearean plays that she has done roles in, and she talks about each of her roles, how she interpreted that character, what the costumes were like. She has, her phenomenal memory includes remembering every costume she ever wore. Sometimes what it was like working with a particular director or with other actors who were in a production with her. But one of the things that's very accessible about this book, this is not an academic, let's dig into Shakespeare and pry the meaning out of it with a crowbar kind of thing. It's very common sense, very much, she would say to herself, so here's a woman whose boyfriend has basically told her to get lost and her father's involved in some kind of intrigue and her brother's going away to France for no particular reason she can understand, and everything is changing. Why wouldn't she go crazy talking about Ophelia in Hamlet? It's very much just simple. How would a person in this situation, how would they feel? How would they react? And she really stresses the fact that Shakespeare is still relevant. Shakespeare's understanding of the human psyche was so deep and so powerful that he still has things to say to us today. I jotted down a couple of things, and she says for an actor to be successful, don't trust anyone else to tell you the answers. No one has all the answers in Shakespeare, but bring your own life experience to the plays and find out what this character's experiences and words and feelings, find out how they intersect with your life and make it very personal.
That's actually really good advice for an actor.
Yeah. If I were ever to be involved with a production of Shakespeare again, I would absolutely pull this book out and read and study every word she has to say about the particular plays. Like I said, she goes through 20 of the plays, but there are also little chapters in between where she talks about different theaters that she's worked at, like Stratford-upon-Avon or the Rose Theater, Shakespearean language, critics, rehearsal, audiences, the changing times and how productions of Shakespeare have changed and the tendency now to set them in alternative times or spaces from what they were originally meant to. And she also tells some wonderfully funny stories. At the very beginning, Brendan O'Hay says, when I sat down to interview Judy Dench, I expected her to be, you know, brilliant on the subject of Shakespeare, but I also know that you can't be in a room 5 minutes without her mucking around, doing something silly. If a package arrives, the packing has to be taken out and turned into a hat. If you eat an orange, she is going to carve silly comic teeth out of the orange peel and put them in her mouth and make funny faces. So, I mean, he just brings out the delightful side of her. Got to tell two of these quick little stories that she drops in amongst them. One was that she was involved in a production of Shakespeare where she had a big scene at the beginning and a big scene at the end and about 2.5 hours in the middle with nothing to do. Some friends of hers in another theater across the street were doing a performance of Les Mis. And so she said, can I just pop over instead of just sitting there for 2.5 hours? If I pop over, can you put me in there as an extra? So they did. So she gets out of her Shakespearean costume, goes across the street, puts on French Revolutionary wear.
Oh my gosh.
And they put her up on the scene where they're on the battlements and it's the big battle scene. And she said, yeah, they're, you know, on the sound effects are going off and I got shot and I was dying very dramatically. And one of the other actors leaned over to me and said, you only get shot in the arm. You're not dying. Like, so she pulled that back a little bit. But the funniest story of all had to be from fairly early in her career. She was doing a production of Midsummer Night's Dream. And in this production, actors entered through the audience down aisles. And so they came right by audience members. Well, from the back of the house, she noticed a gentleman sitting along the aisle who was a director that she had worked with previously. And they had a good bantering relationship, funny joking around kind of thing. And he has apparently a very distinctive shock of white hair that made him easy to spot from the back. Mm-hmm. So she wrote a note and folded it up and had it in her hand and dropped it in his lap as she went by. And the note just said something along the lines of, don't suppose there's any chance of a fuck later on. She gets up on stage, turns around and realizes he's not the guy she thought he was. And she just dropped this note into a total stranger's lap.
That guy probably thought he won the lottery.
Yeah.
And then she's like,
I don't
whoops.
Believe she met up with him after
whoops,
the show.
Though. Wrong lap.
But I mean, full of very practical advice, like embrace your failure. She says, if you're an actor, it's only through failure and trial and error that you're going to learn anything and that you're going to get better. So give yourself permission to explore, give yourself permission to fail. And if you're an audience member, be polite and don't rattle your candy wrappers. And
did you hear that?
She said an interesting thing about audience. She said, I swear the audience all meets up in the lobby beforehand and decides what kind of an audience are we going to be tonight? Are we going to laugh at everything? Are we going to cross our arms and sit there and be like blocks of stone? Or she said because one audience, you know, same production, one audience will be radically different from another one. It is an absolutely charming book. And if you have any fondness for theater, if you have any fondness for Shakespeare, you will be thoroughly entertained because the woman is not only brilliant, she is just a hoot. This book is coming out on April 23rd. It has not been released yet. So order your copy in advance, order your audiobook in advance, and listen to Judy Dench quote Shakespeare like nobody else, except maybe Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
I was going to say, wait a second. You're...
That is Shakespeare, The Man Who Pays the Rent by Judy Dench and Brendan O'Hay.
Awesome. I don't know how I can follow that up, Pat. Sheesh. I think what I'm going to do is I am going to review a book. Well, it was given to me when we went on our book crawl by Best of Books. They gave us all a bag full of like bookmarks and stuff like that. But they also gave us advanced reader's copies that they thought we would like. And she gave me a book that was already in my holds list.
Sweet.
So I was really excited about it. actually read this a few weeks ago, and it's called Cascade Failure by L.M. Sagas. It's a science fiction novel, and it's also a debut novel, which, as you know, is my favorite thing in the world to review. And I now have an advanced reader's copy of this book, so yay. The one caveat I have is that sometimes when you join a science fiction world, there's a lot of world building that goes on, and that means that sometimes the story doesn't move as quickly as you would like it to. This one is, it actually moves fairly quickly. In the very beginning scenes, I think his name is pronounced Jal. That doesn't sound right, though. One of our main characters. I'm terrible with names, so I'm not going to go into that. He's walking around a spaceport trying to basically find passage to another somewhere else from where he is. So he's going around trying to see if he can get on any of these ships to offer his services as a crew member. Well, down comes the bay doors of this, or up goes the bay doors, whatever, of this particular freighter, and he gets on it and the door closes. Well, he's like, hey, I might as well just wander around, see if I can find somebody. So pretty soon, before you know it, he comes face to face with his old mentor, and that's not a good thing. So he totally freaks out, runs away, and his mentor says, you better stop or I'm going to shoot you. And he doesn't stop, and he gets shot in the back with a non-lethal weapon. Basically, what you find out is he was in the military. They call it something else in the book. Don't make me look it up, but the Guild, I think it's called. So he was a soldier, and his military record states that he deserted. So basically, his mentor is really pissed off at him because he left and didn't tell anybody where he was going, and he left service and left all of his crew members and everything that were in danger and just took off. Well, little by little, you come to find out that that's not actually what happened. And a big revelation comes during part of the book about what actually happened to this guy. But in the meantime, they're all on this ship together. So they end up going to this one planet because obviously, you know, they're going somewhere. So on the way there, they stop at this planet. I can't remember exactly why they went in there. Maybe to get supplies. And
it was a Buc-ee's.
Yeah, there was a Buc-ee's. They had to stop. There was a Buc-ee's. Had to stop and get their picture taken with a giant brass beaver. Yep. So they show up, and this planet or this station is filled with dead bodies, and they've been dead for a little while. And they're getting ready to leave, and they find this one girl who's barely alive. So they take her and rescue her. And as they get to talking to her, they find out that she knows what happened, and it has something to do with this code that's built into terraformed stations that is built to kill off everybody at a certain point, but leave the entire structure of the planet fine. It just kills the people. So it messes with their, like their, what the fuck is it called? Life support systems. So what I liked about the book is I liked the family that forms between the people on the ship and all of the, there's a lot. The one thing I didn't like about it is there's a lot of battles, a lot of fights, a lot of scrimmages, and a lot of action. Some people really dig that. Me, not so much. I could start to glaze over after a while. But they have each other's backs, and that's part of the cool thing about it. The ship's captain is an AI, and he's got a great personality, oddly enough. So I really enjoyed that part of it. And I loved the dynamic between the main character. I think his name is, it says Jal, but that does not sound right to me. I listened to the audiobook, so I'm having a hard time pronouncing the names because I can't remember. between him and his mentor, because they have like a father-son relationship, and it just takes them a while to get back into that. The reason I wanted to review this is because I know that a lot of people are going to like it. And I think that it will be the beginning of a great series, especially since it's a debut author. And this was such an amazing first attempt. It's obviously it's not perfect. It has some things about it that I didn't love. But it was definitely an excellent first book and definitely worth continuing on with the series as it goes. So that was Cascade Failure by L.M. Saugus.
Cool.
Sorry about not remembering all the names and whatnot. I didn't write any of that down.
I never remember names.
Ugh, I'm terrible. And since it was the kind of book that was, what do you call it when there's a bunch of different main characters? Like with us, what are we? We are
an ensemble?
Thank you. An ensemble. So there's a lot.
I never would have guessed that one.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. You knew right where I was going with that. I think the second one will be much better. I'm betting on that.
Maybe she was trying to
appeal. Scenes kind of make me glaze over.
Yeah, I don't really care for them. A lot of that stuff, especially near the end, I was like,
Same thing in movies. It's just like, same. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big car chase not liker.
Yeah, same.
I'm really down on car chases.
Same. And when you live with a husband who likes action movies, that explains why I have an audiobook in one ear at all times. Because I get so bored watching those shows.
Women's undergarments.
What do they call those? Structural garments. The one thing that has come around in fashion, I think, is the bras have gotten better.
I just broke one last week.
Slowly again. But surely. Yeah. I mean, they're a little bit better than they were when they started out.
Make them worse.
I just wish they weren't so freaking expensive.
Yeah, that's the pink tax. You can bet if men wore bras, they'd be a lot cheaper.
Like $10.50. Yeah.
They'd be $10.50 and you would find big stacks of them at the Costco.
Mm-hmm.
But are there bras at the Costco? No, there are not.
Cannot buy those in bulk at Sam's.
Damn it. If you could buy them in bulk, think of how much more money you would have since you burst out of those bad boys every couple of months. Boing! Whoops, there goes Bonnie's boob again.
At least this time it was at the end of the workday. So,
although I got to say, I spent my life wearing cheap bras. It was like, you know, whatever I could pick up at Target or JCPenney or whatever. When I was getting ready to go on Jeopardy, I had a kind-hearted clothing. I went to a clothing store to buy a top to wear. Mm-hmm. And she said, you need a better bra. And this was not a sales thing because she didn't sell bras. She only did outerwear.
Yeah.
But she sent me to a shop. She recommended that I go to a shop that not even in Wyoming, down in Colorado. And I wish I could. I think it's a chain, but it was basically pricey underwear and bras, but they fitted. I mean, they did the whole fitting and try this and try that and measure this. And it makes a hell of a difference. I had just been blithefully stuff it blithely? That is not a word. No.
You just been blindly stuffing those bad boys in whatever you could.
The same bra size that I wore in college for 30 years, and that was not my size anymore.
But see, here's the problem that I run into is I'll find a bra that I like from the same store, and I'll buy the same size in two different colors. And then I'll get those, they'll come in because I'll order them online, and they won't fit the same.
Two bras, different colors, same size.
Same store.
And they fit different.
Same thing with jeans.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but that's a thing.
You know what I did the last time I had to go buy jeans? And I'm going to do this forever now. I went to the Goodwill. Because at Goodwill, they have 10,000 pairs of jeans all right there. So if you buy a couple of them and they don't fit, you didn't have to pay $100 each for them.
Well, I buy mine online at a secondhand store. Oh, it's an online thrift shop.
They've probably been washed a bunch of times, so they're not going to shrink on you.
Exactly.
And they're soft. And the online store that I use actually has the measurements. So it's easier to know, like, okay, is this an 18 that's going to fit me or an 18 that's going to fit
me.
A 12-year-old. Yeah. Or I gave you a pair of jeans.
I still wear
that
those.
Were 18s, and I bought them, and I looked and I'm like, I can't even get a leg in this. I don't even know.
I
what
think that was
do.
Mis-sized because I don't wear an 18.
They gave me my money back.
Yeah. Well, and I got the jeans.
That was like European sizer.
Yeah.
An 18 in China, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. The people at the Goodwill always look at me funny because I'm like Mama Warbucks in there with my 25 pairs of jeans.
Oh, here comes Karen the soccer mom to get her jeans.
They don't realize how hard it is to find, well, maybe they do, but ladies, I don't know how many times I have bought expensive jeans that I ended up wearing two times, maybe even one time, because they're not comfortable. They don't fit right. Even though you try them on in the store, there should really be an easier way. I'm waiting for the technology where you can scan your entire freaking body.
And
exactly.
It just automatically sizes you.
And it
you.
Says, this is the size you need from this store.
I've done that.
Have you really?
They had my husband had to go on a business trip to Boston. He took me with him, and I went in this really fancy mall. And like the thing at the TSA almost, you would stand in it. Things would go around you, and then they would tell you specific stores, what size, and the make of jean. And I always wondered what happened to
Where
it. Because
the fuck is that thing?
Amazing.
We need
10
that.
Years ago.
It must have been too expensive.
Well, that
anybody.
Either somebody
yeah,
complained that
really
it was too
intrusive.
Yeah, I was really
surprised that it's not more places.
Hey, if it's, I don't care if it's intrusive. If my jeans fit, I will be intrusive. You can intruse me all you want.
Martha'd be like, you know, taking her clothes off to get in there. Hold on a second. I need
it to fit. I need my jeans to fit.
I'm sick of yoga pants. I have to go back to the office next week.
See, that's what the problem is we spent two full years wearing yoga pants. And now it's like, I saw myself the other day in a news story where they were talking about women who wear yoga pants with everything, even dressy, like, dressy blazer and boots and stuff with my leggings. It's like, yeah. They're like, at least choose some leggings that are fashionable.
No, thank you.
And then I got some fake leather ones and I'm sitting in there going, why the fuck did I buy those?
Because they shamed you into
they
buying
shamed
those.
Me. They shamed me and I was trying to go with the flow. And you know what? I don't care.
Wait, leather leggings?
Well, they're not real leather.
Leather,
but even so,
yeah.
Excuse me,
we are behind the times.
They're vegan leather.
Yeah,
that sounds much more posh than
leather.
And then I tried. Did I tell you about the faux suede ones I tried to order? Mm-hmm. So I was trying to upgrade my, you know, because they shamed me. My upgrade my
your look?
Legging looks, and I ordered a pair of faux suede leggings, and when they came in. They were the thinnest, cheapest.
They were like velvet?
No. They weren't like anything. They were like not even close. And it looked like they had cut the tags off.
Oh.
I even took pictures of it. Complained to Amazon, threw a hissy fit for myself. So like, God damn it, that's not even close to faux suede. Strongly worded email.
It's faux something. It's faux clothes.
You know what they looked like? They looked like if my mom had made me a pair of leggings. She never got it right. Bless her heart. When it came to pants, that woman could not get it right.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart.
Well, I don't have the body for leggings, so I can only wear yoga pants if I'm like going to be at home or Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Because I kind of look like the bottom half of the Grinch. when I wear leggings.
Bottom half of the Grinch.
If it they were green and hairy, I mean, I'd have a costume right there.
I think you might have just started a new fashion trend.
Excuse me, do you have any Grinch leggings? I've heard those are really attractive. It's all the rage right now.
Oh, they just feel so soft when they rub up against things. And then
Grinchings.
Grinchings?
Yeah.
Do you have any pants that I can go Grinching in tonight?
He's a mean one, Mr. Grinch.
Make sure you get that hair just right. We don't want anything showing when I bend over.
At least you don't have to worry about your press-on merkin when you're wearing those.
My press-on merkin's on the outside.
Okay, Mama. That's going to do it for
Three Book Girls.
If you made it this far, you are truly bookish. So go to Facebook and join your fellow book lovers on the Three Book Girls Squad. Follow Three Book Girls on socials and be on the lookout for their next live event. Proud of their lack of shelf control, Three Book Girls is a Steel Trap production.